in 1991, the like 12% of the American population were overweight or obese, and today it's 42.4%.
Whoa.
So seemingly we have more access and more knowledge, and we're far worse off. 122 million Americans have type 2 diabetes, and 1 in 5 of them don't know it, and only 0.02% have ever seen a registered dietitian.
Welcome back to What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest is Vanessa Rizzetto, and Vanessa is a registered dietitian and co-founder of Kalina Health. Vanessa was named by Essence Magazine as one of the top 5 Black nutritionists that will change the way that you think about food. Her true passion is that nutritional coaching and science-based health and wellness education is possible and should be available for all. Vanessa is changing nutrition with Kalina Health, a digital platform that connects clients with registered dietitians for individualized virtual sessions. And a lot of the time, this is covered by insurance. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, go to Amazon and order my new book, Tackle What's Next. And the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a pleasure, and I've loved diving into your work in preparation for this episode. So tell me and in the audience, how did you get started on this journey in nutrition?
Yeah, my mom is from Haiti, which is a third world country. It's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And the thing that she talks about is that it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, poverty lives alongside you. So even though she grew up wealthy, if there was a rainstorm that took a bridge out, it didn't matter, right? There was no infrastructure for her to get food, right? And so my mom, you know, came to America, became a nurse, like married my dad, and then food is available. So my mom made every meal. So growing up, I just ate whatever my mom made. And I also used to be like really upset because all of my friends, my American friends on Friday nights would get pizza, and like my mom was making like rice and beans, and I'd be like so angry. Just be like, can we order pizza like normal people? And then I went to college in the Bronx. I went to Fordham University in the Bronx, and I was free, right? Like my parents were like super strict, whatever. Like, and I was obedient. And so now I could do whatever I wanted, and I was eating Sparrow and White Castle and like whatever pizza was around on Fordham Road. And I graduated college like 50 pounds heavier. And also the gift is that like my mom, for all intents and purposes, would be considered overweight, but like we didn't have a scale. My mother was not talking about her weight. She didn't obsess about this. So it wasn't a thing. And I didn't have that feeling around food. But when I graduated from college, I had to move back home because my first job out of college, I made $25,539. I'll never forget that number. And I lived at home, and I went back to eating my mom's food, and I lost 50 pounds in like 2 months.
Wow.
And I didn't know how I did it. I was like, oh, this is weird. And I ended up going to a dietitian who's a very good friend of mine to this day, pretty well known, Carrie Glassman. And she taught me about food in this like very pragmatic way. Like, if you want to lose weight, this is how you eat. Like, okay. And it was like putting pieces together of a puzzle. And then I learned that nutrition was also like medicine adjacent, that you learned in a hospital, which was also very exciting to me. So then I just decided to go back to school and become a dietitian because I was curious actually as to like how it worked. And I understood that what you put in your body helps you in the long run. So here I am.
Right. Yeah, that's fascinating. Really interesting story. And, you know, some people go to college and they're deprived of maybe alcohol or whatever it may be growing up. And generally, when you're going to college, you're not even of legal drinking age. So that would be appropriate. Yeah. But then you get to college and you go nuts. And for you, I'm not saying you went nuts with food, but you started partaking in things that you weren't necessarily exposed to before. And so no harm, no foul. You pulled the weight off, and then you were able to find a passion because of this. So it's interesting how all of that lined up. And so we'll get back to some of the things that you just mentioned and food being medicine and all of that. Sure. But I want you to tell me and the listeners about Kalina Health and kind of your journey in starting that company.
Yeah, I have worked in every area of nutrition. So I worked in New York City at Mount Sinai Hospital, where medicine is really happening, and it's a very exciting place to work, actually. You know, like Crohn's disease was founded in our lifetime by Dr. Crohn at Mount Sinai, and his mentee, a man named James Marion, is still there, and I got to like learn from him. So this is like fun, right? Like you go and you get to like be alongside them, and they understand the use of a dietitian. They understand what we can do for them, and that was really fun. And then I worked in corporate wellness, and I always did private practice, but I always took insurance because I just thought like, well, it shouldn't be cost prohibitive for someone to come see me. I don't know. So like insurance companies are going to pay me for an hour, and the lowest insurance companies were paying me was $103. And I was like, that's pretty good. $100 for an hour, whatever, no problem. And then my other co-founder, Tamar, who's also taking insurance, she and I had a coffee one day and she was like, do you want to join private practices? Cause it's boring to work alone. And I was like, sure, that's fine. So we did. And then COVID happened. And that was the first time that a telemedicine visit was being reimbursed at the same rate as an in-office visit. And Eric, for so long, practitioners across the board, doctors, PT, OT, everybody was like, telemedicine is unethical. You cannot get the same results. And like, that's actually not true, right? We know that we can be more efficient. I mean, my GI doctor is like one of my very good friends. So if she's listening, I love her so much, but I will like do a telemed visit with her. Then she's like, okay, come to the suite and I'll scope you on Friday. So I've like saved time, right? By going in, et cetera. So we made basically $1 million in less than a year with no marketing and no overhead.
Wow.
And we were like, oh, that's cool. And then venture capitalists started calling, which was like really crazy because we were like, do you know what we do? This is like insane, right? And in that time, we met our other co-founder, Steve, who was running the NYU Future Tandem Labs, which is like an accelerator, basically, like to bring tech to New York City. And so he knew how to fundraise. And so he basically gave me a crash course. It was actually pretty cool because we were doing it all through Zoom at that time. It was still COVID. So when these VCs would say an acronym, I would just like Google it on the side and then be like, oh, okay, and come in. And we raised, at start, we raised like $5 million. And one of our investors is Blue Cross Blue Shield. So we're the only nutrition company with a payer on the cap table. And to date, we've raised about $13 million. Last year, we won the NFLPA pitch day. And we're just giving people access. Like people should have access to good healthcare. And that's what we do. Insurance companies pay me for one hour every week to talk to you. Whereas the physician can only talk to you for like 20 minutes. So the physician is never really going to find out every single thing unless you are very high health literacy and you don't have any guilt or shame around some of your behaviors. Whereas you talk to me and after a while we get to become really good friends and then you tell me all the things.
Right. And there's this kind of hang up in the medical system. Buddies of mine that are doctors, they'll say, look, I am double booked once per hour because we assume someone's not going to show up and I get 7 to 10 minutes to see people. So a lot of times I can't dig into what, you know, I might be seeing someone with, you know, a perceived heart issue, but I can't get to all of the core causes. So now I have to just treat the symptoms as opposed to get them better. I'm so glad to hear that you're getting an hour with people and then you're probably preventing it. And it's great that insurance companies will pay you because they want to get people not seeing their doctor down the road. Right. It's not always the other way around, but
right.
Okay. So let's dig in on this a little bit. So there are so many people out there in this space that would say it's simply calories in, calories out, however that works, but how important is it for people to get that personalized nutrition plan? And what are you guys doing at Kalina to then, what kind of lab work, what kind of tests are you getting done to be able to give them a personalized plan?
Yeah. So it's not just calories in, calories out, because not all calories are created equal, right? So like if you eat 100 calories of Oreo cookies and you eat, you know, an apple with peanut butter, it's like the stupidest example, but it's, you know, it's very, it showcases what we're trying to say here, which is the apple and peanut butter has fiber, has protein, it has fat. It's going to slow down digestion. So you're not going to have these peaks and valleys in your blood sugar, and your pancreas is not going to mobilize so much insulin. Insulin is a storage hormone. So if insulin is always up, weight is always up, right? But those Oreo cookies don't have anything. Just like sugar and carbs. So it's gonna spike that blood sugar. It's gonna mobilize insulin. It's gonna keep you feeling hungry. So that's like the first thing. And at Kalina, right, we find out everything about you. So like, yes, we get your labs. Most 50% of our patients come in for weight loss. That's because in this country, we value thinness over anything. And so that's always going to exist. But when people come in, we get their labs and then we identify different things and spending that time talking to you and really understanding like how, what is your functionality level? And also like level setting for you. If everyone in your family has a larger body and you have a larger body and you are 5'5", 250 pounds, and the lowest you've ever been is 180 pounds. And so there's like some behaviors we can change, et cetera. Like you're probably never going to be 120 pounds. So someone's got to tell you that so you can stop chasing something that you're like likely never going to achieve. But that's fine, because for you, the 180 pounds is good. That's okay. And so I think when people hear that and see that, they're like, oh, okay, this is okay. Also, letting people know that there's no shame in using drugs. Like if you're 700 pounds and you've tried everything and it's surgery or a GLP-1 inhibitor, we can go there and we can get you to be successful and we can help you not have to have surgery. And so like, all, like having someone that can spend time talking to you and also talking back to your physician is where the good outcomes come.
Yeah, I believe in coaching and accountability in all areas of life. So it seems like this is what you're doing. You're helping coach people. So the personalized nutrition plan isn't necessarily, or the personalized plan isn't necessarily, hey, your blood work shows or your family genealogy shows that you should be eating just these types of foods. It's all encompassing, like realistic expectations. And that's how personalized you're getting. That's great to hear.
Totally. Like, because, you know, on this week, you have dinners out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Like, okay, great, Eric, tell me where the dinners are. And so now I'm going to tell you what to order from. And so now we've done the work, right? Like, you already know everything is set, you have a plan, and you're going to go in there armed and understanding like, yes, everyone should be coached everywhere. Like, everyone, you have to answer to someone. It helps you. It helps you do better, be better, right? And so I think the second that people realize that and they're like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like you go to therapy every week and you don't have a problem with that. So like see the dietitian every single week, go see your personal trainer every single week. Like once we normalize that, I think we could do a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree with that. So it seems like, and maybe it's just what you're exposed to and it's the reticular activating system. You see you're in the market for a car and you start seeing it everywhere. I've been on this health journey since I've gotten out of the NFL and lost 60 pounds from when I was playing, which I needed to. I was 310 pounds when I was playing center in the NFL. I didn't need to walk around at 310 pounds, especially with the amount of lower body surgeries I had, you know, longevity purposes, all of that. But so to me, it seems like there's more information out there than ever, especially with social media, especially if you're trying to find it on what's good for your body, nutritional information, you know, kind of turning the old food pyramid upside down and finding out, you know, that maybe that's not the way to go. All that being said, there's more information out there, but if you walk around an airport right now, you might not think that America's healthier than ever. As you see it, do you feel like we're starting to get healthier as a society or not?
No, we're not. So in 1991, the like 12% of the American population were overweight or obese. And today it's 42.4%.
Whoa.
So seemingly we have more access and more knowledge and we're far worse off. 122 million Americans have type 2 diabetes and one in five of them don't know it. And only 0.02% have ever seen a registered dietitian. So people, like this industry is not regulated properly, right? And then people see celebrities or whoever doing some kind of fad thing. And so they're like, oh, I'm going to do this diet that I saw Beyonce do. And you're like, Beyonce is a billionaire and has a chef that's going to make this tomato taste like chocolate. So like, that cannot be your North Star, right? Like, unless you have endless amounts of money, then have at it. But like, I think social media actually is to our detriment because it's the first time that like I can see what Eric Wood is doing, but like I don't live in his house. I don't know what his everyday really is like. It's just this curated thing that you're putting on for people to see. We all do it. And so we are in this really dangerous place where the knowledge is actually not power anymore and everybody talks in absolutes and the truth is it really lies somewhere in the middle. So like, what's good for me might not be good for you. I mean, like, in full transparency, I exercise every day. I don't drink alcohol. I eat vegetables. And in May, I was diagnosed with stage one breast cancer. Like, that's it, right? So like, you do all the things that you're supposed to do, and anything can happen to you, right? But as long as we are engaging with our physicians, we're trying to do the best that we can, like, we should be okay. But here with like the injectables and the food, and like, it's this like crazy like cycle, and people actually don't know that you can access a dietitian and use your insurance to do it.
Yeah. So you talk about these absolutes, and I don't want to gloss over the fact that you just mentioned that you were diagnosed with cancer in May.
I'm totally fine.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'm totally fine. Yeah. I think like emotionally, I'm probably like, there's ups and downs, right? Cause you have kids and you're like, whoa, this is like really crazy. But actually like, it's because I know how to coordinate my own care, and all my friends are physicians. And I was like, hey, I have this weird itching, and they're like, it's nothing. And I was like, I don't think so. I'm going to go get a mammogram. And they're like, oh, this could be something or it could not be anything, but you're going to have to wait 3 months for a biopsy. I was like, yeah, again, that's not going to happen for me. And from diagnosis to surgery was like 2.5 weeks. So, and that's literally why we created Kulina. I was able to coordinate my own care and get everything done in 2.5 weeks. And I'm like, well, on my way, and everything is fine. And it's like, you know, all the treatments are curative, and I'm going to live a long life. And that's what we do for our patients, right? Like, we talk to you, we identify something, we'll call the physician for you, we'll get you seen, and then you'll have a better outcome.
Are you looking to save time in your busy schedule, but still want to dress like $1 million? Let Jordan Yoakum with Tom James Company save you time. He can work virtually with anyone in the country, and he can provide you clothes that will fit perfectly and give you confidence when you walk into any room. Jordan does everything from dress clothes to casual clothes. Also, wedding season is about to be upon us, and Jordan can provide you and your wedding party with clothing that will turn everyone's head. Contact Jordan at Kentucky Clothier on Instagram and let him know that you heard about him on the podcast, and he will provide you with a free custom dress shirt when you order your first suit or sport coat. As Deion Sanders said, you look good, you feel good, you play good. Let Jordan take care of that for you. Again, that's Kentucky Clothier on Instagram. Yeah, that's great. Okay. I didn't want to gloss over that without talking about that for a second. So let's talk about these absolutes. So you're right. There's so much information out there, and you can find someone that is saying you have to do intermittent fasting, you have to do the ketogenic diet, you need to be vegan. Okay. What are your thoughts on those absolute diets? And before you go, I know that there are people, if you suffer from seizures and whatnot, there's been incredible benefits of the ketogenic diet. Sure. And so we're not talking about extremes here, but for your average person that wants to lose 25 pounds, what's your thoughts on these specific diets?
I mean, like, first of all, a diet is just a pattern of eating, right? And so like, okay, if you want to be a vegan, that's cool. But then you need to remember that going to like fast food vegan is not the way to lose weight. I think that's what people think, right? Like, oh, I'm going to be a vegan, and so I'm just going to lose weight. I don't have to do anything extra. I can just go out. I'll just eat a bunch of beans. I'll eat like fake cheese, and like, it's going to be okay. And so first of all, I'm like, okay, you know that like a cashew is not supposed to be made into cheese. So like, I'd rather eat the grass-fed beef that I know where I can source where it came from than this fake cheese. But okay, if that's not what you want to do, that's okay. But you're going to have to put some thought and effort into how you're eating, right? And one time I had a woman come to me, and she was like, you were talking about diabetes and carb counting. And she was like, that's really triggering for someone who has an eating disorder. And I was like, yeah, sure. Counting anything for someone who has an eating disorder is triggering. But that's not the population I was referring to. I was referring to somebody who has diabetes and has to know their insulin to carbohydrate ratio so they could dose themselves properly, right? And so like, that's okay. And also, if you want to lose weight, you're probably going to have to figure out your portions and what works for you. But you being 200 plus pounds, you get more protein than I do, right? Like 5 ounces of chicken is fine for me. You're probably looking at 10 ounces of chicken, right? Like, don't have chicken breasts, maybe three, right? Like, you could probably have 3/4 of a cup of rice, or I can probably only have like 1/3 of a cup. Like, these are the things that people need to understand. And like, yes, we should be more plant forward. We know that that's better for us. We know that the more fiber we have, the better our weight is, the better our gut is. Like, all of these things we understand, but people need help in execution. It's hard when you're reading this literature. Like, right, the other day, the New York Times put out an article that was like, hey, it doesn't matter. Your metabolism is the same until age 60. And everyone's like, Vanessa, did you read this article? And I was like, oh boy. And I'm like, I get in, right? And then I'm like reading it. And I was like, hey, there's a lot of regression analysis. So I had to like go to my husband. I was like, can you talk to me about the statistics? And he's like, no, you're right. This study is pointless. And I was like, okay, great, good. But that, I know what I'm looking at. Regular people don't. So they just see that, then they start feeling bad about themselves. And then they're like, okay, I'm just going to go on a juice cleanse. And like, hopefully that's going to work, which it's not going to, guys. Right.
Okay. So you're saying the juice cleanse doesn't necessarily work. What's your thoughts? Okay. So let's say I live in Kentucky and a lot of people after the Kentucky Derby, a big weekend, you know, kind of dialing in before the summer, that's in the first weekend of May, maybe yeah. Juice cleanse, maybe something like the Prolon fasting mimicking diet. How do you like those as a reset, or do you kind of coach people to avoid those kind of hard resets?
I coach people not to do it. Just first of all, it's like you're spending all this money on something that the second you go back to like the way that you always are, the weight is going to go back on. So it's always like a push and pull here. And I don't think it's really like beneficial. There are other things we could do. We actually like, I've helped people before who were just like, I don't really feel that great. And I've been like drinking a lot and doing this and I need something. And I'm like, okay, fine. So like, let's get some dandelion greens. Let's get some dandelion tea. Let's have that with our lunch and our dinner, like even have it at breakfast, like subtle ways that you could help them without like, okay, you're just going to like eat 8 olives and like drink these soups every single day. But it gets you into like a bad pattern of disordered eating and like not really understanding how your body works. So I'm not into them really at all.
Gotcha. So I'll say this. I've done the Prolon diet a few times, which is sure. A 5-day, for those unfamiliar, yeah. It's a 5-day fasting mimicking diet. And here's the reasons why I would do it. And I don't recommend it for everybody, especially someone that struggles with, you know, body images or eating disorders. But for me, it over 5 days, your stomach essentially shrinks a little bit. So you get full faster. And for me, I like challenges. And, you know, in this world of comfort, sometimes I just feel like when you do things that suck, it's good for you. And sure. So there are some benefits. I also understand that, you know, there was a Nobel Prize given on autophagy and fasting and all that, which is funny because it's been around for thousands of years. But that's why we'll do it in our house. But at first I was promoting it pretty hard. And then I was like, man, I feel like maybe that's not the best because I understand this more than most and don't necessarily have those. So full disclosure, I have promoted that because I will have guests that'll be like, well, Eric, you didn't tell Vanessa that you like the Prolon diet. And the reason I like it and the reason I even tried in the first place is I was on a board with a guy who was in his 60s and he looked like he was about 40. And so I'm all about learning from those that are maybe one step further than me in life and have something or possess something that I see as admirable or something that I would want. And so I asked him what has been your rhythm. And this wasn't his only thing he said. Let me get that straight. He eats really well. He exercises regularly. He avoids excessive alcohol, all of that. So this wasn't the only thing, but he said, once I got into my 30s, 40s, 50s, I started doing prolonged fast to try and kind of cleanse out some bad cells.
Yeah. I mean, look, we know that people who like don't eat as much, right? The Minnesota Project from the 50s, like they live longer. And so that's where this whole like intermittent fasting comes from, right? And even people are like, hey, are you intermittent fasting for like cancer? And I'm like, I mean, maybe not on purpose, like just because I'm freaked out by food. That's the other thing, right? Like, you're like, I don't know what to eat sometimes. Like, maybe I should just have soups. Maybe I should just have vegetables. There's so much information out there that it's just like mind blowing. And I think that if you, like, you have full visibility on what you're doing when you do Prolon. So I'm not worried about you. If you want to do it, do it. But for most people, they're using it as like the crutch. And so they, you know, oh, I spent all summer, like, you know, on the Amalfi Coast drinking Aperol Spritz, eating whatever. And now I've gained 15 pounds. I'm just going to do Prolon for 3 weeks and lose 15 pounds. And you're like, okay. But then it's this just like cycle over and over again. They're always looking for that quick fix. And when you don't give it to them, they're like, oh, well, your way doesn't work. And I'm like, I know, but my way is actually going to work because it's going to be more sustainable. So like, come to this side. But people want some things pretty fast.
Yeah, that makes sense. When you see clients for the first time, I'm sure there's patterns. So what types of things are you seeing? Where are you seeing people fall short nutritionally for the most part when they come and see you?
Yeah, they don't eat enough. They wake up in the morning, they don't eat anything until 3-4 o'clock. Okay, fine. They're like, I'm fasting. You're like, okay, great. And they're like, yeah. And then at 9 o'clock at night, I eat half a pint of ice cream and 15 Oreo cookies. And I just don't understand why I can't lose weight. And you're like, because fasting doesn't work for you. And so I think that's the thing. It's fine if you want to try it, but when you can identify that it's not working for you, you have to try something else. And they're like, I'm so uncomfortable to eat in the morning. And you're like, why? Because the way that you're doing it doesn't work. So I usually tell people like, okay, we're going to try my way for these 2 weeks. And if it doesn't work, we'll go do whatever you want. But then they lose a bunch of weight and they're like, wait, I've been eating more than I've ever eaten in my life. I'm like, I know it feels like that. It's really about the frequency, not the amount. And so you're not really hungry because you're filling yourself up at proper intervals. And now you're going to fare better.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense to me. I've heard you speak on, I've read where you talk about seasonal eating and eating foods that are in season. And so we're recording this here in the fall. And so what would be some good seasonal foods that to consume this fall?
Yeah, like delicata squash. Has anyone had this? Because it's like my favorite thing. You actually can just like cut it in half and then cut it in these like half moons. And you put a little olive oil on it and maybe some salt and crushed red pepper flakes. And you bake it and it's sweet. But so it's like your carbohydrate, but it has a lot of fiber. And that's just like a fun fall thing. I make this pumpkin chili, which is everyone thinks I'm a genius when I make it. And because it's canned pumpkin, but it just brings, again, a different flavor. That's in season. I make like apple pie without the pie part, and I'll just like cut up Granny Smith apples and I'll do like pine nuts and cinnamon, and that's a fun dessert. There's like a lot of really easy fun things like citrus, peaches. You could have those and not spend a lot of money. Also, like, frozen vegetables are allowed to ripen at peak, right? You can get organic frozen vegetables as well, and then put those in your fridge, in your freezer. And so there's less waste here, because, you know, you buy the kale and then you eat only some of it. And then you look and you're like, oh, there it is. It's gone. Another good trick I have is that I'll prepare vegetables. So like, I'll buy kale, I'll cut up cucumbers and red bell peppers and onions, et cetera. And I put it in a gallon bag, and then I'll either put it on the side for salads or I'll put it in eggs. And so it's always, this bag is always readily available to me, and you could do whatever you want with it. And so you aren't being so wasteful.
That's really smart. I've gotten really big on frozen berries because, yeah, one, I try to consume a good amount of berries, and yep, one, they're expensive. Two, they go bad. If I'm traveling on the weekend, come back, okay, now they're bad. So I've gotten really big into frozen fruits and vegetables in our house. And part of it's because it's cheaper, and then they last longer. And yes, you're freezing. They are freezing them for you when they're perfectly ripe, as opposed to waiting around for it. As a dad of two kids that are 5 and 8, at times I feel like they eat really healthy, and people will think that our kids eat healthier than they likely do, because oftentimes what I'm pushing out would be, hey, here's, you know, a healthy meal. Here's us eating sushi together. And people crack up at how much our kids love sushi. And my son especially will just crush raw salmon and smoked salmon. But in general, what should parents be focused on with nutrition for their kids? Because it's, you know, with their palates, it's likely never going to be perfect.
Yeah. Well, first of all, kids, their palate is bitter. Like, they taste things bitter, which is why they don't like, you know, like when you were a kid, you didn't like something and now you like it. That's why. So you got to like give them a little bit of time and space. Also, like you don't need to hide things from the kids, right? You just put the food in front of them and ask them to try it. And if they don't try it, that's fine. And you just like keep pushing it out. I will say my son, Rocco, had to be forced. So it's like, okay, you're going to find a vegetable that you like and you're going to eat that vegetable. Otherwise, he would just be mainlining cookies all day. So like that, there some of them, you're going to have to just find one that they're going to eat and that's going to be okay. But like, also, we don't have to be so worried. Like their stomachs are smaller. So like, think about like a three-year-old only needs 3 tablespoons of food at a time. And a three-year-old's whole day is spent snacking, right? Like, and they're at school, they're getting snack time all the time. So then when the kid comes home at night for their dinner and the parent is like freaking out because the kid doesn't want to eat like the chicken and the pasta and the vegetable, I'm like, yeah, that's like just too much food and they've been eating all day. Don't worry about it. They're fine. You've given them, you know, protein, you've given them vegetables, you've given them fruit, they're going to be okay. And I think the more relaxed you are about it, the more willing they are to try it and just know that it is going to get better over time. And if it doesn't, you can just call me and I'll give you the what I did with Rocco, and now he eats cucumbers, carrots, red bell peppers, and arugula.
First off, Rocco Rizzetto is such a strong name. I absolutely love that. Second off, that's really good information. Because at times you'll almost feel guilty. Hey, they're not eating this, you know, at night, and a lot of times we'll do that. What you said, a friend of ours is a nutritionist, and I've follow her work and we talk to her and it's like, okay, introduce a new food with a familiar food. Mm-hmm. And look, it's just getting them, you know, acquainted with that, getting that around them and that's okay. So good stuff there. I appreciate that. Yeah. Do you have a morning routine that you like to stick to?
Yes. Every morning I will say some prayers, meditate, I'll work out, and then I'll get some kind of breakfast. I don't know what the breakfast is. It just really depends. It depends on what Rocco is doing. I have a daughter. Her name is Kate, who her brother calls her Kathleen. He'll be like, Kathleen. And I'm like, are you talking to your sister? He's like, yeah, I think it's funny to call her Kathleen. And I'm like, okay. So sometimes I'll make them this like oatmeal crumble, which they get really excited about. And I put frozen berries in it and they'll eat that all week. And that doesn't take a really long time. And then other times they want pancakes. And so my husband, who's very smart, will make these high protein pancakes from scratch on a Saturday. And then they can just like pull them out of the freezer and like smear peanut butter on them and be on their way. And then once in a while it's an egg, but that takes a lot of time and effort. Today it was for Rocco and I did peanut butter toast with like raspberries that were going to go bad. I just like crushed them in there. So we got some fiber and went about our business. But that's pretty much what the day looks like for me in the morning anyway.
Yeah. So many people that I've had on the podcast that are successful in so many different areas. It's amazing how many start off with some type of spiritual practice, some type of quiet time, some type of movement. It seems to be pretty consistent and none of them are exactly the same, but it's amazing how often, Tim Ferriss in his book, Tribe of Mentors, I believe it's what it is. He asked, you know, hundreds of people about their morning routine. And it's amazing when he drew conclusions at the end, that was part of it, was that a lot of people, and look, especially when you have kids, your mornings get jacked up all the time. And that's why I said one that you like to stick to, because people can also get dogmatic in this and say, well, I couldn't get to my routine this morning, so now my day is completely thrown off. Okay, well, there's, as my buddy David Nurse says, a little space and a little grace is often needed as well. Yeah. When you look at Kalina, and what's your long-term vision and goal?
Yeah, I've been saying this out loud to the universe. when I go to church every Sunday, and on Sunday, like at the end of the prayer of the faithful, they're like, and all of the intentions you hold in your heart. And I'm like, God, please. So the intentions that I hold in my heart are that an insurance company buys us and then all of the insurance companies follow suit. And so what should happen in my ideal world is that you go to your primary care physician, you get your labs drawn, they identify you have elevated triglycerides, and then that's a trigger, and you get 12 telemedicine visits with the dietitian. Like, that's it. You don't have to, you're not thinking about it. It's just funded by your insurance company. You have to meet with them every week. Like, that's some sort of like mandate, and that's it. Like, that is going to reduce the total cost of care. And this is actually the first time that anyone is tracking data and attribution to the work of dietitians. So we do have a big job that we're doing, and it's exciting and exhilarating and scary all at the same time, but we know that it works. And so just like getting that proof point and saying like what we do, it does matter, and it is helping people be well. And it's also helping the physicians. Like you had said earlier, like your friends are like, hey, I only have 7 to 9 minutes, but you know how many times I have dealt with a patient and been like, okay, let's track this, this, and this. And then I'll call the doctor and be like, this patient needs a medication adjustment. This is all the data. And they're like, oh my God, thank you so much. Adjust the medication, labs look better. And the doctor could then have someone who's actually acutely sick and needs more time in their office.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'll be pulling for that because that is necessary right now. I mean, there's just so much that could be solved throughout society, this American society especially, if someone could coach them through their food choices and not shame them, just coach them and give them some information and let you come from an informed perspective. And if insurance covers it, that would make it so much more accessible.
Yeah, when we were at the NFLPA, I was like, whoa, these guys came and talked to me. One guy was like, yeah, they would give us Popeyes before a game. I'm like, excuse me? Like, what are you even talking about? He was like, yeah. And it was, he's like, some players just like they have their own dietitians and they're doing their own thing. But like the dietitians that are provided for us don't pay that much attention to us unless we have a need. And I'm like, all right, but how many people are on the team? 30? I would just see you like every other week. And he was like, yeah, clearly you're a different kind of person. But the things that we learned after this like Harvard study, which was like, you guys gained 40 pounds, like you have all of these health issues, blah, 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 and like nobody's doing anything for you. And I'm like, wow, when you don't know anything about football, you just think like everybody has like all these means and you're like, oh, these guys are fine. They're rich and they're famous and they have access and they're going to live these long, uncomplicated lives. When you really like dig into it, like, oh, the NFL should just use Kulina.
No, I agree 100%. And I'll tell you a little bit about my kind of food journey in the NFL or food journey in football in general. So I put on 100 pounds in 2 years from my junior high school to getting to college, and then tried to change body composition throughout college, but still be over 300 pounds because as an offensive lineman, if you're not at least 300 pounds or if you're not a bigger dude, you're going to get tossed around out there. So you got to be a certain weight, let's say, a certain size. And so maintaining that size. So I get into the NFL and we'd show up at our meals in a variety of foods, but the main part would be chicken tenders or mac and cheese and all this. And so that's what we ate. And I didn't think anything of it. I wasn't informed. And as my career went on and I met so many different individuals that kind of helped me along my journey, it's amazing. Towards the end of my career, I wasn't any stronger per se, but based upon my food choices, and I got way into the weeds of blood work and what foods were causing inflammation in my body, I'm the exact same weight, no stronger, so probably not much more muscle mass, but my face looked different. Even like the redness in my face at times was reduced, and my skin, I mean, it was amazing how much like better my joints felt throughout the week, because we're getting trashing our bodies on Sundays. Yep. Well, and throughout the week for that matter, but it's amazing how much even better I felt because of nutritional choices. And so I took a lot of that knowledge into this next phase of life, but a lot of people weren't exposed to that. So when you transition out of the NFL and you're used to burning so many calories on a day-to-day basis, it's amazing how many guys balloon up. And it's this common misnomer that all guys that leave the NFL, they're in incredible shape. And I tell people, those are the people that you see on TV. Yes, Joe Thomas and Jeff Saturday and all these offensive linemen that have lost a bunch of weight. Yes, you see their beautiful faces and their trim bodies on TV. But if you go to an alumni event, that's not always the case. So there is a definite need for a company like Kulina to step in and like you said, not all of these guys are retiring from the NFL with this nest egg of money that they can live off for the rest of their lives. Many people don't earn that much money, and you're stepping into the workforce after, you know, maybe 6 years after the rest of your peers that you went to college with. So now you're at an entry level job and you're in your late 20s. We could talk about this for longer than we need to, but there is, I say all that to say that there is a definite need for this. So anything that I can ever do to assist you in that, please let me know. Where can listeners find out more about you and your work?
Yeah. Well, you can go to KalinaHealth.com and you can follow me on Instagram, Vanessa Rosetto RD. And sometimes I have recipes and sometimes Rocco makes an appearance. So you can check it out, but lots of information, lots of, we have a lot of blogs, just like a we can do. There's a lot of things that you can get from checking us out. So come and check us out for sure.
Good deal. Well, I appreciate your time, Vanessa. Thank you for pouring into me and the listeners, informing us and helping us along this health and wellness journey.
Thanks. It was so nice to meet you. I had a good time.
Yep, absolutely.